Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Wild Virginia's Virtual Coffee Talk. Today we were joined by the Virginia Community Rights Network, also known as VACRN, which guides, supports, and encourages local efforts to recognize and legally secure the rights of nature and communities to a healthy environment through self-government at the city, county, and state level.
So, hi, Wild Virginia members and viewers. My name is Grace Tuttle, and I'm a volunteer with Wild Virginia. Today, I'm joined by Mindy Zlotnick and Heidi Bertu, founders of the Virginia Community Rights Network. And their mission statement reads, Virginia Community Rights Network, or VACRN, guides, supports, and encourages local efforts to recognize and legally secure the rights of nature and communities to a healthy environment through self-government at the city, county, and state level. The VACRN is dedicated to challenging the injustice of illegitimate corporate rights that impede local and direct democracy through educational training, workshops, campaign strategy development, and public outreach. And before we get started with our chat, if you're unfamiliar with Wild Virginia or just want to know more, I'll tell you a little bit about that. So we are a community of people dedicated to protecting Virginia's wild places. And Wild Virginia was founded in 1996 and rooted in public lands and forest protection through volunteer action. And today our mission is to protect and connect our favorite wild places by educating citizens, landowners, and stakeholders about the threats to our lands, advocating for connectivity and integrity of land and water, and influencing decision makers by mobilizing our citizens. So our main goals are protecting water quality, improving habitat connectivity, providing adventure, monitoring all Forest Service projects, submitting reports and comments and appeals, and providing action opportunities for our members and citizens. So thank you so much, Mindy and Heidi, for joining me today. And I would love to hear, how did the Virginia Community Rights Network get started?
Well, I'll take that and see what Mindy has to add. Well, we started out as frontline Atlantic Coast Pipeline fighters. And some of us were with, are still with the grassroots organization Friends of Buckingham. So during those 6 years, long time, epic battle to stop the pipeline, we were seeing up close the dysfunction of the regulatory system and its inability to protect our air and our water, our land and our communities. So we educated and organized ourselves to get communities out to all the public hearings, check the boxes, jump through the hoops, and we allied with, you know, over 50 organizations, other grassroots groups, and we called on the experts. But it became quite clear to us that the system is really designed to regulate we the people and not so much the polluting industries. So, yes, it was canceled, and that's fabulous, and we did a lot of hard work, but really this is so far from the norm, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. So 4 years ago, we heard about the rights of nature, that and a light went off. This was just a paradigm-shifting moment for some of us. So rights of nature and the community rights movement. This made so much more sense than the standard approach, the regulatory approach, as it gets to the roots of the assaults and why they're happening on our communities. And it became clear that we don't just have a pipeline problem, we have a democracy problem. And here we are living in the land of our forefathers who are attributed to creating a democracy, and then we find out that really maybe not so much. So in addition to fighting the Atlantic Coast Pipeline through the regulatory system, we also educated and organized ourselves about the rights of nature movement and, you know, bringing the news to, you know, other Virginians across the state. So earlier this year, we were invited by the National Community Rights Network to join that network of states and to do this grassroots work, because we're all grassroots. And we're also partnered with CELDF, C-E-L-D-F, .org, and that's Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And they're the ones who pioneered this fabulous work. And we owe much to them. Mindy, do you have something to add to that?
No, I think that's pretty much our roots and our beginning. And we're just really, rooted in that paradigm shift of looking at a different way of looking at the system that we really perceive as fixed,
right,
and really seeing that it needs to be broken in some way and reconfigured so that nature that's our basis can really be protected.
And can either of you elaborate on what is meant by the rights of nature?
Sure. So I think it's important to start with looking at what exactly we mean by nature.
Right.
So if we look at nature as really a unique and indivisible self-regulating community that really sustains and contains and produces all beings, including humans. And at the present time, most humans see themselves as outside of nature and separate from it. So because of this, we've allowed our laws to develop in a way that gives us permission to exploit and destroy and extract and pollute by treating nature as property rather than a part of ourselves. So this paradigm shift that we were talking about really recognizes our interdependence with nature and really the need to live in harmony with it. And for me, and for Virginia Community Rights Network, it really means securing the highest societal value for nature, but also at the same time securing the highest legal protection for nature. So this is where the community rights legislation comes in, which I think we'll probably be talking about. And that's where communities can make local decisions. Local communities can really protect the ecosystems that support their existence without interference of corporate priorities, let's say. So really when we're talking about the rights of nature, it's securing the rights that nature has evolved for itself by law, with law.
I'd like to add to that. I remember when I first got introduced to this idea, I loved, for me, like I said, a light went off. And I just want to pause actually for your listeners to see if they haven't heard those words together, the rights of nature, what happens to them? What do you feel viscerally? Because that was what happened for us, that we feel this like deep in our bones, that this is right. And it's not a new idea. It's ancient. The indigenous people hold dear to this, but we've been ignoring them through the years. But so what I wanted to say, kind of getting back to what I originally wanted to say, was that I kind of struggled with what does rights mean? Like, why should I have the right to health care or fair housing or a living wage? Why? Do I not have to earn that? And what I came to understand is that if you replace rights with the word responsibility, that when we care for each other, we're not going to end up in this mess that we're in. And, that's the buzzword these days, socialism. And for some people, it's a dirty word. And for others, it is, oh my gosh, is so much freedom from the anxiety of dealing with those basic, there's a safety net. And America does not do that well. We do not have a safety net, and people are living under so much stress and really so much abuse, I would call it. This is what we're doing to the world that we live in, which is us. So when we use that word responsibility, that we are responsive and responsible to each other, I don't know, that might really bring it home.
Fantastic. I mean, we're watching the consequences of rather extreme individualism play out.
Yes.
Many people, myself included, are waking up to the realization that we need each other and we need the land and the land needs us to be responsible for it. And, you know, it's all connected and we can't pretend any longer. I don't think that it's not. So.
And we're also at some point we're depleting the land because the earth can't replenish itself because we're taking so much out of it. We're not living within our means.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. It's all on credit cards and we're all totally overcharged when it comes to the earth.
Yes, so. Absolutely. And so that, you know, I guess that brings me to the next logical question is, you know, we've been sort of indoctrinated with this idea that nature is our dominion and our property. And so why, you know, what's the uprising of challenging that? Why is that so important?
You want to take that?
Well, I think that is self-evident. Does that bring back memories? I think the proof is there that when we don't take care of each other, when we don't take care of the community, if we consider nature as a community, just look what's happening. I mean, we're burning up, our air is polluted, our water is polluted. I know that I live a privileged life because I live in a community with clean air and clean water, at least now. Not only do we have the pipeline coming through, but now we have gold mining coming through. And we know that that's hugely toxic for the water. And am I far enough away to be safe? But what about the people who live there and everything? We're all downstream, we're all downwind. So back to what does giving nature rights mean? It's not that nature needs to have rights. Nature is asserting herself right now, right? Big time. And she always does. And she will win. We will not win if we keep trying to think that we can win and take everything for, you know, continue with this consumerist way. So what it is recognizing that it's our laws that have shaped how we look at the world and our whole governing system, which has been exported all around the world. And it looks at life, at nature, at everything as property. And once upon a time, and really truthfully still, women, children, enslaved people, men, if you're not on the very top of the pyramid, we've all been colonized,
right?
In the sense that we're being used as resources instead of being thought of as a, we're being used as a resource colony,
right?
Instead of thought of as, this sounds a little contradictory. Help me out here. Instead of assets that, you know, we're looked at as annoyances when we
right.
speak up
instead
about
of
the
part problem. Of the system and part of nature. We're looked at as an assistant to extracting profit, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
These are the robots that can
we're
go out there.
And sacrifice. You know, some people are going to have to live in areas where their, you know, their lives are going to be dreadfully impacted by this because we're just going to profit and that's it. So yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And
when we look at, to your question about looking at nature as property, when somebody owns property, they have the right to destroy it and harm it. They have the right to take care of it,
right,
and do whatever they want with it. But they have the right to harm it.
Right.
So if somebody owns it and they want to have fracking or a landfill, or they have the right to do that, and they can apply to get a permit and be permitted to do that by the state or whatever level they need. So that's the big thing, that when somebody owns property, they can harm it.
Right.
And nature and the communities don't have any say in that. We have no standing in court at all if it doesn't affect us directly. And so the rights of nature kind of, the rights of nature movement kind of turns that on its head,
right,
and says, no, the nature should be able, or people who are affected by these things should have the ability to speak for nature on behalf of nature,
right,
in court and say, no, this is not a good idea. This is going to be affecting our water or our air or whatever, and you can't harm us. You shouldn't harm us. And so I think that's an important piece.
Right. And how does that differ from current environmental law, which is, you know, seems to be sort of regulating the harm instead of not causing harm? Yes.
Well, the current environmental laws operate on this regulatory structure. So, like, you know, Divya alluded to in the beginning, when we were fighting the ACP, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, we went through all the hoops. The regulatory structure has to put up hoops for us to go through. And so we were able to go and, you know, give our 3-minute passionate why this shouldn't happen, because they had to set that, those testimonies up, but they didn't have to listen to anything that was said. So the regulatory structures are really permitting human-centered material development, mm-hmm, and not at the cost of allowing harm to occur to nature.
Right.
So it's really anthropocentric. Our legal system is really short-sighted.
Right.
It allows fracking and mining and clear-cutting and factory farming to destroy the ecosystems that we all depend on.
Right.
So the regulatory system is set up to protect the polluters, mm-hmm, but not the people who are living in the area, right, or living on Earth in general.
Or
so big difference
in the area, yeah.
And the rights of nature are ecocentric. They're right, really established the principles of rights to exist and flourish and regenerate and evolve and require governments and communities to uphold those rights. So decisions would be really different if those laws were in place.
And the rights of nature laws, maybe a closer look at what they look like. There's kind of two approaches. And one is for communities to create an ordinance, what we call a community bill of rights. And the other is to create a rights of nature conservation easement for one's own individual land. So those are two tools that we use to assert the rights of nature. And they're also being used for social justice issues. I just want to bring that in for a moment because, you know, again, things like fair wages, fair housing, you know, freedom from police brutality, immigration issues, all of that. This is like transforming. It's a bit of a revolution in the way our laws have evolved to become more and more tools of the 1%,
right,
and have gotten so far away. And actually, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund has a democracy school where we learn about how our democracy has evolved. And actually, right from the beginning, you think about it, they were white, privileged, propertied men who created our Constitution. Interestingly, it took a long time. What did it take? 70 years this year, we know, that we're celebrating for women to get the vote. 70 years to get the vote. That's a long time. Our concern is for this situation, for climate, the climate reality that we're living in, is that we don't have 70 years. And we need to do a paradigm shift much more quickly. And I guess I just want to draw back to these ideas started solidifying back in the mid-90s. And it was 2006 at Tamaqua in Pennsylvania, passed the very first on Earth Rights of Nature Ordinance. And I believe that was for, Mindy, I think that was for industrial sludge, essentially industrial waste being used for fertilizer on our land. And many other communities have, there are over 200 communities across this country that have created these community bills of rights. And some of them have gone up against the law and have been challenged. And that's, I have to say that that's one of the things that really attracted me to this movement, is that they do this knowing they're going to be challenged. And it's about challenging precedent, because that's how our legal system works. Once you create a precedent, then they follow that. And they also, they refer back, right? That's how they draw their evidence. And let's see, I'm kind of all over the place now. I'm, there are a number of ways I can go.
Can you go into more specifically, sort of for our listeners, explain what is a community bill of rights, you know, what an example, or what is that really, what's the meat of that?
I can speak.
You want to go? Yeah.
So there are several reasons why in our legal system today a local community doesn't have the legal right to decide for themselves,
right,
why they can't make that decision. You know, for instance, in Buckingham County, we didn't want a compressor station,
right,
but the Board of Supervisors decided, well, there's money in it, and there's jobs in it. This is good. This is good for the county. It didn't matter that, you know, people came and testified that the air and the water would be affected and blah, 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 blah. They gave time to hear that, but they didn't take it into consideration.
Right.
And they decided, because they could, because they had that right, they had the right to make that decision, because it was a local thing, they had the right to make that decision that the compressor station was going to come in.
Right.
But when it got to the pipeline, which was a state issue, they said, oh, sorry, we can't, our hands are tied. You know, it's a state decision. We can't prevent it from coming in. And so, because they were afraid of being preempted by the state. And so that's one reason why local communities are afraid to do it, because the state will say, no, you can't do that. Nature as property is another reason why it feels like hands are tied.
Right.
Corporate personhood, the fact that corporations have the same rights that we do.
Or more, actually. More rights.
More rights
than we do. That's the problem.
It, you know, is another reason. And the regulatory system is just keeping us in our place. And so there are, it's kind of like, you know, like the image that CELDEF uses, is that we're boxed into this limitation of allowable self-government. We can't get out of it unless we break out of it. And the way to break out of it is to break the system of law. So so the Community Bills of Rights declares we have this right to say, we want to protect our environment. We have the right to a healthy climate, or we have the right to just put in whatever you want. And it's pushing up against the legal system. And when a legal system that's that powerful gets pushed, they get pushed back. So a really good example is the Lake Erie Bill of Rights in Ohio. It was passed in February of 2019. After much work by the people on the ground, it took them about three years to get it passed. There were thousands and thousands of people that voted. 62%, I think, of the voters elected to have it passed. It was the first ecosystem in the United States to be protected. And their struggle began when Lake Erie was so polluted with algae growth that water was cut off for 3 days, I think, in 3 days in Toledo. And so a group of people said, this is it, you know, we have to do something about this. So they passed the Lake Erie Bill of Rights, which is also known as the LIBOR, And it was on the books for a year, but the day after it was passed, an agricultural company sued the city of Toledo, and it was supported by the attorney general in Ohio. And it took them a year to get it off the books. And about February of 2020, it was argued in the state Supreme Court for 2 hours. But one judge decided, nope, this can't happen. And so it was kicked off the books. But the organizer from CELDEF reported that people from all over the world have been calling and asking how they can do this in their communities. People all over the United States has. So it's brought a lot of light to how the state government, so the federal government, pushes back against the desires and needs of local communities.
It really illuminates how, you know, we will grow up believing that the government is by the people, for the people, and we're seeing so many clear examples. I feel like it's the first time in my life when I'm truly questioning, you know, what our government is for, who it's for. So,
me too.
I'd like to add a few things. One about we call them CBORs for short, Community Bill of Rights. Well, maybe I'll just go there first.
Yeah.
One of the things that, another thing, there were many things that drew us to this work, right, was that this was a yes. The pipeline was a no, 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 no. But this was you create a Community Bill of Rights, and it asserts what you want to see happen. And interestingly, we draw from our state's constitution. Because in our constitution, and I'll quote here, it says things like that all power is vested in and consequently derived from the people. Mm. And it also says the government is or ought to be instituted for the common benefit, protection, and security of the people, nation, or community. Sounds great, huh? And it's already, and it shall be found in, and if, whenever the government is found inadequate or contrary to these purposes, that a majority of the community hath the right to reform, alter, or abolish it. Wow. Also, our constitution, and this is most of the state constitutions have this.
Right.
It says, further, it shall be the Commonwealth's policy to protect its atmosphere, lands, waters from pollution and impairment or destruction for the better enjoyment, and so forth. So we in our former incarnation, before we became the Virginia Community Rights Network, we had the pleasure of creating a Bill of Rights for the James River watershed. Mm. And it has standing in Buckingham County, which is where we're centered. But we knew that our Board of Supervisors was never going to pass this, but we saw it as an opportunity to educate ourselves about the process of creating one and understanding what this is, and then going out and helping other people figure it out. So we're hoping that other communities pick up on this idea, along with all the other problems they have in their communities, to create a Bill of Rights for the James River watershed. I guess the other thing I wanted to say, because Dillon's rule is the buzzword, and I guess I wanted to point to that, because what we're always told is that Virginia is a really strong Dillon's rule state. But again, as we see, it took women 70 years to get the vote. And what is that expression? Power never releases anything without a good fight, right? So what I want to say about the Dillon's rule is that it's not a law, but it's an opinion. And I think it's really interesting. When we learn our history, it's so illuminating. Right. So under this concept of Dillon's rule, it is that community governments are administrative extensions of the state, rather than elective bodies representing the right of the people to local self-governance. So Dylan was a judge, and he was with the railroads, and he defended the railroads against the people back in the 1860s, and he wrote a book on this that suited the aristocracy of this country, because essentially that's who created this country, or created the laws of this land originally, and continue to, with their power and wealth, continue to consolidate their power to our laws. So essentially, we need to overturn all of that, and one community at a time, also at the state level and at the federal level, the constitutions are being challenged. There are other states that have challenged their state constitutions numerous times. And again, they know, but each time that they challenge it, they get more and more support. So, wow. You know, the whole future is open to us.
Right. Progress.
And we have about 5 minutes left before it cuts me off. So I guess just any, you know, I definitely want to know, one thing that I want to know is, you know, I feel like it takes me a while to wrap my head around this concept. And, you know, after watching We the People 2.0 and listening to you all several times and sort of immersing myself in this ideology, I feel like I'm beginning to have, like, oh my gosh, the possibilities, you know. So that's wonderful. And my question is, you know, in closing, any final thoughts or opportunities or suggestions for our membership or anyone listening to this to get involved and to learn more? And, you know, what are the baby steps and the first actions that one could take?
Good question. Yeah. Well, I would suggest going to our website. We've created a really well-sourced center for information.
Good.
There's several presentations that we're doing that, of course, through Zoom these days, that we're doing, and communities can organize themselves, and we're open and available to speak to people.
Awesome.
Watching We the People 2.0 is a real game changer, and we've presented that numerous times with discussions afterwards. And just be in touch is what I would say, and we'll figure out what kinds of steps are needed for the community to educate themselves. Because it's really about education at this point for many people.
Right.
You know, many people who have been involved in the regulatory system, when we say that, they're like, yeah, we know. What do we do?
Right.
But many people, they don't have that experience. So education is really the first step.
Right.
Would you add anything?
Well, I put all of our contacts in the chat.
Okay.
And included with that is the National Community Rights Network and CELDEF, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. But I also wanted to say that there's another movie coming out, which I think I'm really excited, Grace, that that We the People 2.0 lit your fire.
Yeah,
there's another film coming out that I think does it even better.
Okay.
It's very succinct, and it's called Invisible Hand. And it's launching September 4th. Not sure when this podcast is going to launch, but that's something folks can look for. I don't have a link to it on here. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, we'll make sure to put all of the information that you've sent us in your website and your contact information whenever we send out this interview and where we post it. So that's fantastic.
Great.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so wonderful to speak with you, and I feel like I could talk about this all day.
Well, then we should.
I know you all could as well. But thank you so much for taking the time to, you know, educate me and answer my questions. And I'm sure people are going to be really interested and want to get involved and know more. So thank you.
And thank you so much. We just love that Wild Virginia is highlighting this, because
they're amazing people.
Yeah, they are. We've had the privilege of working with them.
Love them. So we thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in for this episode of Wild Virginia Coffee Talk. For more information on our campaigns, please visit www.wildvirginia.org. Stay wild, Wild Virginians.